With high expectations, humans leave Earth to begin a new life in space colonies. However, the colonies soon descend into violence and chaos as people are unable to agree on the quality of a popular mecha anime series from the mid-1990s. Hoping to solidify its dominion over the colonies by settling this dispute, the United Earth Sphere Alliance launches an unprecedented judicial undertaking, Operation Litigate. The Alliance seeks to bring the results of these secret proceedings to the galaxy by disguising them as a podcast. The People vs. Gundam Wing.
For the defense,
Colonel John Q. Renata the 13th Esquire.
For the prosecution,
a true student of war and the law, Biliardo, Peacecraft.
Judge, presiding.
The Honorable Unemployed Podcaster, Josh Darnell.
May it please the court, case in question is Case 102, the Gundam Death Scythe. Original air date, 4/14/1995.
Okay, in hopes that I will be allowed to return to my own timeline, once this question has been settled, I now call these secretive proceedings to order. May I reiterate for the mission logs that our objective is to restore justice and peace to the colonies by answering the unanswerable question, is Mobile Suit Gundam Wing rad or is it bad? A reminder that these secretive proceedings are being recorded as a podcast. So please just lean forward into the microphone a little bit there. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Mr. Peacecraft, as the prosecution, I assume you have some mean stuff to say.
If you find the truth harsh, that is no concern of mine. Where to begin with this fallacy of function, the Gundam Death Scythe? For the moment, I will only speak of the most egregious of sins, the total lack of courtesy and manners shown by Relina Dorlin. To depart your own birthday party whilst your invited guests languish in confusion and disarray is an offense to all standards of decency and the comportment expected of nobler souls. There are those who might call this a simple party foul, but as the battlefield has taught us all, the foul proves the fool when the cannons fill the trenches with fire and blood. I would also like to enter into the record that the Gundam Death Scythe EW version model is cheap plastic trash. Do not waste your hard-earned coins on this dime store filth. I will speak my truth even in the armpit of horror. Thank you, Your Honor.
And Colonel Kyush Renata, you'll be wanting to apologize for this show's many obvious flaws.
Your Honor, it is clear that I cannot support the path my esteemed colleague is taking. Once again, while he may have viewed this episode with his eyes, it is beyond clear to me that his vision has been clouded by that all-too-common foggy queef from a space sea witch. I feel for him, truly I do, but I cannot sit idly by while my special murder boy rides a horse so gallantly. Such beauty and such grace. Sure, my special murder boy is shot by my other special murder boy later on, but that's later on, and special murder boys will be special murder boys. That's why that saying exists, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay, according to my Space Judging for Dummies handbook, we will now hear evidence presented in the format agreed upon by the Granada Accords of UC-0080, audio recordings of three white guys interrupting each other. Cool. Mobile Suit Bliff, activate the Just Wild Beat communicator.
And here we are again.
When rich kids go to recess, they don't kick a ball around. That's for poors. Balls are for poors. Rich kids do fencing.
I don't even know if rich kids could could know where to get
even
a ball.
Know what a ball is. Can their brains even perceive the shape of a ball? Are their lives completely absent of spheres?
Yes.
We're at the prep school.
Yes.
The kids are going to fence.
Unnamed prep school. I don't think they ever say the name.
No, they don't.
That's true. That did not occur to me, but you're right. Yeah. Never even like a shot of a sign, at least not so far.
It doesn't matter.
We're at the rich kids' school. We know how very rich they are because of their uniforms and their fencing epees. Isn't that what you call it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I'm surprised that I know that. there's this sort of Promethean-browed blonde kid mm-hmm. who is about to square off against Hero.
Who is never named.
Yeah, he is not named either, despite having a lot of lines in this episode.
And is pretty distinct.
Yeah.
I thought of him as Gundam Smurm. That's immediately
Gundam
how I was like,
Smurm.
It's Smurm Johnson.
As he shall be known moving forward. Gundam Smurm decides, now that they have swords in their hands, this is a good time to start talking shit to the mysterious, potentially dangerous kid. Does. He starts giving him a hard time about tearing up Relina's invitation, which is become, I'm assuming, sort of the talk of the school.
Clearly.
At this point, yeah. I disapprove of what you did to her because I'm your classmate. Don't you think that that was shameful? And Hero responds by just not just disarming him, but like breaking their swords.
He broke his sword and then like stabbed him through his face shield.
Through the face mask. So we get a cool shot of like the broken jagged edge of the fencing sword stopping centimeters shy of Smurm's prep school Smurm's eyeball.
Prep Smurm.
Which is, it's actually cool, and again, we're further establishing what a badass, you know, killing machine Hero is,
mm-hmm.
and then Hero has a line about, tell me sooner next time, I'll give it to you instead of ripping it up. Bow. Throws his mask off and walks out. I guess PE is over for Hero. where are the teachers?
Maybe there aren't any. We're never shown any.
Who can know? Who can know? Who can say?
I feel like anytime you have children playing with swords, maybe having some adult supervision, or no one seems to respond to the fact that he very nearly impaled another
student. The teachers are poor, and they're confined to their classrooms only.
They're not allowed to wander
around.
When
they're done teaching, they must go into this little closet area and sit and wait.
But they're certainly not allowed to fence,
no,
because that's only for rich people.
They are given a ball, though.
That's the Lord's battle implement.
Here, take this ball, poor person.
Yeah, go kick a ball around, poor.
So as Hero just smolders his way out of the room.
Saunters.
He
saunters, perhaps. A little attitude.
He's constantly smoldering.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
he always has a little
He's
bit
a
of...
He's a burning brand.
There's some girls sitting in the bleachers who take a moment to fawn over his except, oh, he doesn't look like he'd be so strong. It's almost like he's genetically engineered or something. Or something like that.
He's pretty strong. I do like the constant, just the kid. There's always girls around to narrate what we just said.
Right. They're the Greek chorus of this episode.
Yes,
for sure. And I don't know if that stays in place moving forward. I'm sure at some point they leave this stupid school behind.
I think so, yeah.
What if the schoolgirls are always there even if they're not at the school anymore?
They show up in their own mobile suits. they each have a Taurus mobile suit.
All right, so we cut to a ship. Lieutenant Zex is on comms cutting some kind of a drug deal with another ship's captain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Trying to get, he wants access basically to the area that they're exploring. They're looking for something that radar picked up falling through the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
We know, and Zex knows, that was a Gundam.
Mm-hmm.
This random Navy captain guy who works at the marina.
Waluigi.
Yeah. He doesn't seem to know that. And so Zex's angle here is to say, oh, it looks like you're having a hard time getting those suits offloaded and finding this. I'd hate for these delays to impugn your upcoming performance evaluation. So the guy's like, oh, damn you.
Yeah.
So Zex throws out a plan in which they can help each other. He says, my submarine is having some engine trouble, and if you'll look at that, I'll lend you the use of my Pisces and Cancer mobile suits. Mm-hmm. And the guy, oh yeah, you're wasting the army's money, but okay. And he decides, Zex, mm-hmm. it's a good plan by Zex. It's a good little con that he's running. The Pisces, I don't remember, do we see these yet? Pisces is a fish mech.
Yeah, we see him.
Yeah, more shots of the cancer.
I know we see them later. I couldn't remember if they show them here now.
No, they don't
just
show
mentioned.
Here.
Yeah,
which would be useful, but they don't.
But the cancer is awesome. The crab mech, big fan.
They go to shots of them sitting in their little holding bay.
I didn't recall the ship, but I know we see them a lot later, so no big deal. Anyway, cool design on the crab mech. Just want to take a moment to say that. It's all about that. So Zex has got access to the search site now, and you know he's cooking something up. He's smarter than ever. He's the smartest guy in any room that he walks into. We cut back to the prep school. Hero is just straight stunting on horseback.
That was my exact word. I was like, just stunting around,
just doing tricks, like jumping fences, probably. You see an actual kind of a flicker of joy in his face, which is the first time we've seen him derive joy from anything that doesn't involve violence. So I guess horses are like his one sort of weak point.
Would they have had horses in the colonies?
I guess they could have, I guess.
Just remember that. If we ever see shots of Hero's home colony, look for the horses.
That is interesting. Yeah.
I mean, maybe they're like, they're kind of like the Citadel in Mass Effect. Where lots of green space where you can have a horse.
I haven't seen shots of the colonies yet, and I assume that's something you see more of later. But yeah, if it's...
I mean, you're assuming he's... only lived in the colonies.
Perhaps. Seems a safe assumption.
He's from the colonies.
Perhaps he lived on Earth at some point.
I'm
picturing these as sort of like Total Recall style bubble worlds where everything's under a big dome. Hmm. It doesn't seem like they'd have horses. Maybe they have computer simulations of horses.
They're not. Some of them are kind of dome-like. A lot of them are kind of like circular. And like the habitats are on the inside of the circle, with the artificial gravity.
Bottom line, Hero's good at everything.
Yes,
that's what we're learning. That's what the show is telling me right
now. He's good at everything.
He's good at
bad
everything.
At nothing.
Yeah, he's
he can pilot anything. I'm a mobile suit, a horse,
an ambulance.
He has at least passing skill in anything. Yeah. That he's John Reese from Person of Interest.
Yeah,
he's Batman. He's Jim Caviezel's character from Person of Interest, whatever. And we just accept that. That's totally fine. That's a common conceit from shows like this. So I'm not gonna knock on that. The girls continue to chatter about, oh, he's so good at horse. He certainly doesn't need horseback riding lessons, which is sort of, again, a vaguely sexually charged thing to say. But they're adolescents. They're at that stage in life. We also find out he's good at hacking computers because we cut to an open window with a horse with a horse parked under it.
I actually like this scene. This is when the voice actor started clicking for me.
For Hero.
For Hero, yes. For sure.
Oh, yeah, because it's actually funny.
Yeah. He's like, tuition?
Cleared. Yeah.
No problem. That's
financial check? No problem.
No problem.
Yeah, and I like when he gets it. He even sort of like kicks back in his chair a little bit. It's the first time, sort of like slings his legs over the armrest and is financial check cleared, no problem. But before he gets to the point of hacking the bursar's office, he's pulling up schematics, searching for weapons that are available in an arsenal at a nearby military marina. Mm-hmm. Have I got that right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he finally finds something that he feels like is suitable for what he's trying to do, some deep water torpedoes that are in storage. He's like, that should do the trick. And we don't exactly know what the trick is at this point, but we know that he wants those deep water torpedoes.
He says something about this will destroy it for sure.
Yeah.
I was at least like, oh, he's talking about the gun to me. He's trying to blow up his own gun.
Yeah.
But
I think that's a safe assumption.
Does he say, maybe he does say that there. Yeah. We cut back to outside the school. And again, these weird ass girls are on Relina's.
They're unrelenting.
They're always on. Poor Relina's in her car. She's in the car rider line, just trying to get home. And they're like, Relina, what's wrong? Show us your pretty smile, Relina.
Smile for us, Relina.
Smile for respond to us.
What are you, sad because a boy said he'd kill you? Ridiculous. Smile.
She's like, you guys are so nice, or something like that. Yeah. And then she pulls away. In her classy pink.
A lot of Relina's lines could just be replaced with like vague banshee moans. be like, okay, yeah, all right.
Is it Relina or the mating call of the Highland Sasquatch? We don't know.
She's getting there. It's better than last episode.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see. We're coming up. It's important.
We're coming up to some big Relina moments.
Interesting that you try to make that point right now. You chose this juncture in time. So, yeah, so they start to drive away elsewhere on a road somewhere.
Somewhere.
Hero rolls out from under a cargo truck.
Uh-huh.
As it's moving down the road. Okay, that's all we get of that for now because we cut back to the pink limo.
Yeah, I want to establish real quick, this is the first time we see Hero in his gym clothes.
Yeah,
which is what he's going to wear the rest of the show.
Yeah.
He dresses for comfort, not like for style.
Comfort and function.
He's always going to be in his workout clothes.
He doesn't care about looking cool.
No.
Yeah.
His green tank top and black shorts.
Mm-hmm. Athleisure. Back in the pink limo, Relina is having a conversation with herself, first in her head, and then she starts to actually talk out loud. And this is, I think, for my money, the most baffling line read she's had so far.
Yeah.
Because she says, "That boy is so secretive. He has many secrets. That's why. I know his secret. That's why. He wants to kill me."
Yeah.
Now, since you went out on a limb and said she's doing better.
Not yet. Not
unpack yet. That line reading for me. The choices that were made.
She's clearly gone through a trauma here. And is having a little...
Well, they cut out for the American dub all the scenes of her just fucking shotgunning Quaaludes.
Yeah.
You couldn't get away with that on American TV back in 1995.
No, I'll go ahead and throw in, like, for her to not, she's just now connecting the dots, yeah, of like, wait a minute.
And just barely.
And
like,
barely.
She doesn't really get the aha, something's going on here moment until the very end, yeah, of this episode.
It makes her, it doesn't make her seem stupid because it's too weird.
Yeah.
It literally makes her seem like she is on drugs. It feels like we're missing something we're supposed to know.
Yeah. Or is she a robot or something? Like, I mean, exactly. Honestly, if I didn't have y'all here kind of throwing me breadcrumbs
right,
to say, okay, well, this is kind of how her story is going to mature a little, in a very vague sense.
If I tell you she's a robot, will you let this
she
go?
She is not a robot. She's not a robot.
She's clearly.
This is not Big O.
Yeah. This is not Small Wonder. Okay.
Oh, Big O.
So at some point she switches from an inner monologue to actually speaking out loud. So her old man driver is like, "Oh, reading them suspense novels again, young miss," or however he says
which
it.
Which is a funny line.
It's kind of funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
And her response, like, without any guile, so sure am, like,
sure
that.
Am. Yeah.
It's the most chipper she's
sounded. That's what I think is weird. Like, even if you leave, like, you put aside her delivery, okay? Like, just think of it as a line of text that's in a script. Her lines are fucking weird, and no one else talks that way. Yeah. Like the driver, perfect example. Like, that's a normal line that you can understand.
Yeah.
It's not delivered particularly well. It's just kind of like, oh, you know, but you get it.
Yeah.
Her line, like, I feel like in the original Japanese, which is me going out on a limb, like, I think they wrote her speech patterns to be pronounced and different, much like Zek's lines are.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I can almost guarantee it's probably one of those, like, she talks like high Japanese and everyone else is talking low Japanese.
Sure.
And when it got translated and localized for the US, they didn't quite know how to convey that.
Yeah.
So it just comes out real weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'll buy that. And I can assume that's at least some of it, you know, and even though I'm certainly willing to forgive that in terms of my assessment of the quality of the show, it's still, like, good fodder for us to poke fun at.
Well, sure. I think it could also be the trying to match the mouths. We talked about that.
Oh, yeah, sure. Where she had to, like, the original, like, voice actor put a weird pause, which made sense in Japanese.
Because, yeah. It's like, well, her mouth isn't moving. I can't very well just talk right through that. I have to stop in the middle of this word, or I have to stop after this word.
Right.
So I could see all that being a factor, but
I think over time we'll stop banging on the voice acting.
It's
as
funny
much.
Right now
because it becomes a feature instead of a bug.
Yeah.
After a while, but
it's
weird.
It is weird.
It's very weird. You're like, what?
But her, I feel as her character grows and gets more
involved in all this. I feel like it does get better, at least from what I've remembered, but I guess we'll find out.
We will.
Well, this is when I wish I knew more about other similar products from 1995. I mean, were they this bad? Is this industry standard for dub at that time?
Honestly, this is probably one of the better dubs at the time.
Well, this one had a lot of challenges. Like, it's probably on par, at least, with most other dubs of the period. But this one has more challenges because, A, it's dead serious. Huge ensemble cast. Most other dubs of this period, there's, like, one main character that does most of the talking. And then there's, like, side characters. There's, like, two side characters. And then the villain du jour for each episode. You don't have to have this, like... Also, they're not trying to deliver, like... geopolitical thoughts,
right,
or thoughts about death or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I would agree. This isn't egregiously more wonky than other things of the period.
Yeah.
It's probably just, right on par.
She's just so much worse than the rest of them.
Right.
And I'm willing to buy the explanation that they were trying to, in the original Japanese, there was something they were trying to do with her dialect to make her sound highfalutin,
mm-hmm,
relative to everybody else.
Yeah.
And that just didn't. That came through in a strange way.
Right.
Coming in English. That makes sense to me. I'm still going to poke fun at it, though. At least for the time being.
Because it's fucking silly.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is.
All right. We see Hiro. He's found his deep water torpedoes. He's rigging them to blow, tampering with them in some way. This is where I had in my notes that he says, this will hit it hard enough to trigger the self-destruct. So mm-hmm. That's when I was like, okay, he's targeting his
I think he mentions that like he's trying to destroy this before Oz gets
it. I think he does. Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does mention it. Oz here.
I just love he's like, I've got to blow it up. I've got to blow myself up. I've got to blow everything up.
And that's significant because Oz... It seems like a lot of Oz's machinations are sort of secretive on Earth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's sort of an embed within a larger military organization. Mm-hmm. So it means that the Gundam pilots know that Oz is the real threat.
Right.
They're not here to just like kill Alliance plebes. I mean, they mm-hmm. will, but that's not, it's not yeah. just about
Oz havoc is the actual
on the
danger.
Federation military. It's Oz is the real threat.
Yeah. And I do kind of like that he's not explicit about it. About why he needs to destroy the Gundam so bad is like, oh, well, of course, if Oz recovers it, then they have a Gundam.
And they'll build more.
They'll build more. Yes. Right.
So very quickly, we cut away from Hiro. We go underwater again to where Lieutenant Zex's search efforts for the Gundam are underway. He's got some of those nerds that work for him piloting. We get a good shot of the Pisces and the Cancer
mm-hmm.
Out there looking for the missing Gundam.
Led by Catra's voice twin.
Yeah.
yeah.
It's the only one in this one, I think.
That's like super noticeable.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. So several things start. This is we get into one of these sequences here where a lot of things happen at once,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and had to watch it a few times to sort of unpack everything that had just occurred. We see several suits deploying from the marina, and someone says on comms. I think it's Lieutenant Zex says on comms that the captain must have caught on to what we're doing. And then suddenly the sensors register that multiple mobile suits at their depth have been destroyed or gone offline.
Mm-hmm.
And we very quickly see this is Duo, right?
Yes.
I'm learning the names. Okay, I'm getting it. Duo in the sort of black Voltron-looking Gundam suit with his thermal scythe. And he's out there taking out mobile suits underwater
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
at this moment. And everybody kind of starts to panic. Cut back to the deck of an aircraft carrier. One of the plebes turns around to Captain Wario from before and says, all of our mobile suits are offline. And he's just like, fire every missile, launch all mm-hmm. the torpedoes. Someone says, oh, Lieutenant Zex is down there. He's like, I don't care. He's probably one of the bad guys.
Yeah.
So huge volley of explosives dumped into the water. Doesn't seem like any of them hit anything.
No, not really.
A point about the art here. This is... drawn, I mean, 1995, they did an excellent job of, or maybe they accidentally influenced what we think of now as like modern, like contemporary naval ships would look like.
Yeah.
I mean, now there are a lot of ships in the U.S. Navy that were built back in the mid-90s, but the newest stuff, like the littoral combat ships,
mm-hmm.
look just like those little cruisers that are flanked to either side, just like it. I mean, wow. Like if you'd seen a littoral combat ship and I said, draw a picture of one, this is what you would draw. Mm. And so again, kind of we were talking about the Master Chief suit and everything last time. I mean, it could kind of line up that like the nerds who became the engineers that designed those ships.
I don't doubt it.
Watched Gundam Wing.
Yeah. And it like was just 25 like, years ago. That's the perfect moment for it to seed in people's brains.
Yeah,
and to be built,
absolutely.
You know, 10, 15 years later.
It's just the resemblance between some of the Navy's more sort of like prototype stuff right now that you can find pictures of on the internet. And the way that the ships look in this is uncanny.
Oh, wow.
It's uncanny.
Cool.
So that was just an interesting kind of aside to me. He pops up. Let's see. Yeah. I've had that diversion there about, oh, here we go. Cut to Zexa. What a fool. Because they know that like the bombs are blowing up all around them and it's all useless and it's not helping. Cut back to the bridge of the ship. And the captain guy is like, oh, you like that? Ah! you like me now? And his victory is short-lived because Duo pops up on the deck of the ship and literally cuts the bridge off the ship.
Yes.
It's great.
It's such a great moment. I love it.
Just a big diagonal slice down the bridge tower, which like starts to slide off, and then they didn't want to draw it falling the rest of the way into the water, so it just blows up.
Yes.
for whatever reason. it just explodes. But it's fine. It's a totally cool shot. A helicopter takes off, like some guys jumped in a chopper, like, let's get the hell out of here. Duo's like, nope, target lock acquired.
I love that arm thing. I'm like, you're just going to have to go get that. It doesn't come back.
Yeah, I wondered about that. I mean, because it is like, it looks cool, it but looks it's like cool. A part of his arm that flies off in like a rocket fist.
He does go get it before he goes and fights Cancer and Pisces, I guess.
I'm willing to give them that. They don't have to show me him retrieving every piece of his giant robot suit. So he blows up the chopper, even though it's trying to escape. And then we're treated to a shot of Duo with a psychotic glint in his eye, saying, "You all die. Anyone who sees me has got a date with his maker." And as we referenced with several of these characters in episode one, seems to be enjoying it a little too much.
Oh, yeah.
A little too much.
Well, you know.
This is satisfying something on a very visceral level with them. But really cool sequence. Jarringly, we transition to a fancy party. away from the booms and the fire and the blood.
It's good because I was real curious about what was happening at this party.
Yeah, but what about Relina's birthday party?
What about the birthday party? We
this
built it up.
This is all well and good. We get it. But we knew Relina was on her way to a party. It really has been the most foreshadowed event of the first two episodes.
It really has.
You feel like even the pilots that haven't even interacted with this plot line are like, oh, man, I wish I could go to Relina's birthday party after I murder all these people.
I don't think I'm going to be able to make it.
Of course, then I'd have to kill them all because they'd all see me there, but oh, well. Belina steps out onto the stairs to address the crowd. And does it with all the emotion and vibrance that we've come to expect. Mm-hmm. I've never been so happy, period, pause, and delighted. nobody seems to think it's weird, so I guess she talks like this all the time. Unfortunately, Pops is already cutting out.
Uh-huh.
He cares about work.
Oh, we get a rare shot of Relina's mom in the party.
Yes, we do.
You don't see her much after this.
You really only see her one more time, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Dad's leaving to go to work.
Yeah.
Relina again steps in to say, I completely understand why you value your job more than your children. You're a very important man. And, you know, kind of like she did at the airport before.
Right.
Except then she immediately was also mad about it.
Right.
But this time it's. So he's like, great. Okay. Happy birthday, honey. Whatever. And he leaves to go do important stuff.
But he does drop pictures of Operation Meteor pictures.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because she's like, the shooting star.
And she's like, does that mean Hero is a little prince?
Well, there's a news report right before that, too. Yeah, that the shooting stars were just that. And they were just shooting stars. They weren't armed robots that are now
and she's like, but that's
fucking up military
lie.
Targets.
That's a lie.
Hero was one of them. Then does that make Hero a little prince?
which I have no memory of them ever explaining that line.
They never do.
Is it a reference to the book?
It must be, right? Like,
I think so.
Did he fall from a shooting star in that book? I mean,
he lived on a moon.
Yeah.
So that could be a name for people who live in the colonies. Maybe
that's
if I like stretch.
I think so. I think that's right. I think it is a reference.
Because that was my recollection of that, was that the little prince lived on a moon, and the pilot guy that Richard Kiley played in the movie, you know, whatever his name, like, landed on his place, not the other way around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I bet it was some, like,
they don't ever really explain it at all.
Like, yeah, do they call other people from the colonies little princes and princesses? Or
I don't know.
As slurs go, not that bad.
Yeah.
As pejorative
stupid
terms.
Little prince. Why don't you talk to a rose and cry for a while?
Anyway, she makes a big scene.
Yes.
She runs out of the party. People are like, wait, let us go with you. Cut to the highway again, and poor heavy-browed dweeb guy, Smurm, is racing. Oh, God, I'm going late to Relina's party. He's in like a full tux.
I like it doesn't really fit him all. I'm like, whose tux are you wearing? Is that your dad's tux? Are you secretly a poor?
Yeah, is he a scholarship kid?
He might be.
Yeah. Oh. He's racing down the highway. Oh, I'm not late yet. And then Hero blows past him in his stolen ambulance his way to... I think Hero has a quick line or a thought line about, I've got to get there before Oz. He references Oz again right here, too. Not as to what they're trying to do, but he's trying to beat them to the Gundam.
Yeah.
Then we're at a circus?
Uh-huh.
We are.
It's time to check in with our other pretty death boys.
Yeah. Moody Kid is Troa. Right? Okay. Yes. Excellent. I'm 2 for 2.
I was just thinking, have I never thought about the fact that it's Duo, Troa, and Catra? It's 2, 3, 4.
Oh, wow. It's Troa.
Because Troa's Gundam 2, and Troa's Gundam 03, and Catra's is 04. So their names are just 2, 3, 4.
Does Troa mean 3?
Well, it's got the TR in there.
Who's the other one? Wufei?
Wufei, which I don't think means 5. Does Yui mean 1?
Hiro.
This is important. We must look this up.
Yeah.
Well, Troa means the great one, I think.
Sounds like a cognate of 3, at the very least, in some language. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail us. But Duo and Catra are definitely 2 and 4.
Yeah, that can't be a coincidence. They had to have been going for some kind of a alignment there. Anyway, while you look that up, predictably, Troa's trying to join the circus.
Right. As was foreshadowed
in accordance
in
with
his 10-second appearance in the previous episode.
He appears to have gone up to the ringmaster during a performance and handed him what I have to assume is a falsified clown resume.
I thought of it as that Ron Swanson thing, the like, I can do what I want piece of paper.
Yeah.
No, it's his resume. He typed that up and printed it out. His Gundam has a printer.
I think they would have.
Does he have legitimate clown experience, or is it falsified? Is this like
he does have legitimate acrobatic experience? Clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, the ringmaster's not impressed. Oh, this doesn't mean shit to me.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said.
Yeah.
What's this fucking shit, kid? Us in 1995. Oh my!
Yeah.
Oh my!
Good thing my parents are in bed. The lion snaps and snarls, and he Crocodile Dundee's the lion.
He does.
He sort of like puts his hand out and calls
Hello
it.
There.
And the ringmaster is astonished, and he says, "Beasts only bear their fangs at enemies. They're true to their feelings."
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of a badass moment.
Is it?
I'll let you two hash that
out. I mean,
for a moment.
About your 13-year-old self, or however old you were then.
Would have been 15.
15, yeah. What, did you think it was cool at the time?
I don't remember. I think I didn't actually watch Gundam Wing until I got to college. So
yeah,
because we didn't have cable because we were poor, Jonathan.
Yeah, they didn't do fencing at what high school did you go to?
Troop County High had
Troop County High didn't have a fencing team.
We had some horses though.
Because we didn't belong to the school.
Had to.
One of them was the assistant principal.
No, I was just thinking about how, like, it is a cool line. It's a cool moment. It's a cool line. I like Troa.
Yeah.
All that said, I do think as the show goes on, several characters are very similar in how they view the world.
Yeah.
They're all these, like, nothing is important but death. I will say these weird samurai poetic sort of lines. But when all of them are doing it, like, so that means Hero, Zex, Treyz sometimes, Troa, basically all of them will have these, like, let me say the poetic thing. And
yeah.
it starts to become,
well,
it's not cool because everybody does it. Like, it's fine here.
I think the characters do diverge eventually. Obviously,
true.
Once we get to know them a little bit better, and I consider them pretty different. I think Troa is, it's like Hero, then Troa. Troa is kind of a combination of Hero and Catra.
Hmm.
I'd say.
I mean, I could see Zex saying this line. I mean, he would have snickered at the end of it. He'd have been like, "They're true to their feelings,"
and shot someone.
It would have been much more sexual coming from Zex.
And shot someone in the back. Yeah. Yes.
They're true to their feelings.
He has another great line later in the seventh.
Yeah,
season.
Yeah.
It's rare that there's an episode that doesn't have a good Zex line.
Right now, Duo stands out the most to me out of all of them because he doesn't say shit like that.
Yeah.
So far.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, maybe he'll start, right? We're only two episodes in, but he's just always kind of like, well, hey, I'm here to blow up this ship.
Well,
die,
yeah,
everybody.
Yeah. And I think that's the appeal of Duo is like, he seems like a normal person who just happens to also be okay with killing soldiers and shit and blowing shit up.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're true to the
then
we
the girl.
See a pretty young woman who appears to be wearing a sweater under a negligee, which I've never been to a Japanese circus, so I don't know. Maybe that's what they wear.
It was probably cold,
but like the contractually she has to wear the negligee.
That's right.
And she goes, mysterious kid. And then they cut away.
And they cut away to a Gundam in the back of a truck.
It's a Gundam on a truck. Next scene.
Covered with a tarp.
Covered with a tarp.
Which they've established that these things are fucking huge and weigh thousands of pounds. It's just on the back of a truck.
Yeah. Well, they do that. That happened.
Covered up with a tarp.
That happens forever.
Yeah.
It's always like that. It's weird. Like the truck size is always way too small.
Yeah, I understand they're in the phase where they need to be able to hide the Gundams easily. So they show shots later of them all being like in a lake or whatever. But just them on the back of a truck.
Can they fold down like, I don't know,
no.
chair? I mean, because they hid that one inside the fake fighter jet when Hero was coming into the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of like broke apart and then you see it sort of, you see like,
oh no, his does transform.
His can change mode.
He can
transform from Gundam mode to like a fighter jet.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, yeah. So that's an
This is the only one that can do
the
that.
Okay. All right. So in this case,
which I think was a new thing for the series. Mm-hmm. That was the first time that it ever been like, what, a Gundam that can turn into a fucking fighter jet?
Yeah. Transformer?
Yeah. Because that was a Robotech thing.
Yeah.
I think they kind of like stole that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're just getting away with it here by implying that, because I assumed like
it's very like
legs probably like fold up and its arms come in, you know.
But nope. It's just a convention. It's just a like, we're saying that the Gundam is hidden. Don't think about the fact it would crush this truck if we laid a Gundam on it.
Yeah.
This is a little confusing for me the first time I watched it, and it's only because I don't know the Gundams well enough to be able to look at them and say, oh, that one's Duo. Well, actually, Duo's is the one that I can't immediately identify.
Yeah.
Some of the others, especially Troas and Heroes, in my brain still look kind of similar.
They really do.
Especially if you just see the face of the Gundam. And so for a minute, the first time I watched it, I thought, oh, have they recovered it? Did we skip the part
he
recovered it and put it on a truck or something
like
that? And then I talked to y'all, and y'all said, I think, Derek, you pointed out actually that, because I made mention of that scene, and you said, that's Troa's Gundam. Went back and rewatched it. Okay, fine. Like, that was just a cutaway to show us that while he's in here getting noticed by
While he's setting up a cover, he's got his Gundam hidden.
Yeah, lying his way into a circus job. His Gundam is tucked away back here in the woods in the back of a truck. Okay.
Fine. Which is a good cover because, you know, the circus probably travels on a circuit.
Oh, sure. And it's interesting to see each of them what their plan is.
Yeah.
Like, because they're all different and they're not coordinated at all.
No.
Because they don't know about each other yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, quick shot, Gundam on a truck. Move on from that to something I would say equally, if not more weird. We go to a random field. Cutra is in a big tent with his butler with what appears to be his personal security force of mobile suits.
Uh-huh.
Positioned around the perimeter.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
What?
The Maguna Corps.
Which says that name has not come up yet.
No, it has not.
They had like number 10 logo or something on their shoulders. I got a quick look at it.
It's clearly the other four Gundam pilots didn't know you could just bring
an entourage,
team
onto your secret mission,
right?
And luxury items too. I'm hoping there'll be an explanation as to how he was able to infiltrate all that stuff on Earth, because like Hero just brought himself and he got noticed.
Yeah, I think we argued about this, you and me. Maybe
we talked about.
I think my theory is we talked about it on mic. Okay, well, there's so many people that my theory would be like some of them came down early and infiltrated and kind of prepared things. And then maybe like a core team of like 15 to 20 were on his transport bringing the Gundam down.
I think they're from that.
Oh, the tribe is originally from that desert?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I mean, is he the rich kid of the team? Is he like Warren Worthington on the X-Men?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
He's
Richie Rich.
He's like the colony Richie Rich at this point.
Okay.
Like his family's a very big deal.
Mm-hmm. So he has a kind of another weird speech where he's like, Earth. The butler asks him how he's enjoying Earth, and he's like, it's so beautiful. So beautiful.
Well, he looks at a sexy shot of how he's posed his Gundam amongst the tulips.
Yes, his Gundam is reclined suggestively in the tulips while flamingos are shitting all over it. Mm-hmm. But it's a cool shot, and it actually says a whole lot about Cutra that I don't already know.
Yeah.
That's how he would... That's how he would park his Gundam, right?
Yep.
He's not just like, sit down so I can hop out of your head. You know, I mean, he just... It's this one beautiful...
Hold on, wait. I got to get the hand up on the hip for the effect I want.
Perfect. Based just on this scene alone, I'm more excited to learn more about Cutra than I am any of the other characters that I've been introduced to so far.
I think you will find many fun things to learn about Cutra and his whole deal. And I'm a big fan of his Gundam, whose name has not been said yet.
No, it has not.
And we will not say it. I want to ruin the moment where you learn the names of the Gundams. Other than Death Scythe, obviously.
We know Death Scythe.
Yeah.
Pretty on the nose. Because it doesn't, in fact, have a Death Scythe. Okay. Help me out with this next scene.
Okay.
There's a kid. I don't think it's a kid we know yet.
It is.
Who is it?
It's Wu Fei.
That's Wu Fei.
This is the first time you're seeing him, because you only saw him for literally 20 seconds in the cockpit, you're seeing him, and you're like, oh, he's very short. He's like 14.
You're already helping then. Yeah. Okay, so all I saw from Wu Fei in episode one was that one shot of him looking at the camera going, I'm Wu Fei. Bam, cut to the next scene.
Yes.
Yep. But he was all in his cockpit, had all his hooked up to all his, all his drift compatible.
That's hilarious that you didn't even realize, that you might not have even realized.
Nope.
It's one of the Gundam pilots.
Yes, I didn't even like. I mean, I assume
because with this show, it could just be a random new character being introduced.
It could be just a random new person, and he's buying a truck, and a truckload of explosives.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Next scene.
Yep.
That's
Take care, kid. And then they show his Gundam is hidden in a lake or something.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool. It reminds me of Voltron, how they all were in the lake.
Yeah. Well, it's like the writers of the show were afraid to like leave a main character out.
No, they want to show you everybody.
But they
definitely run out of gas with Wu Fei. This is two episodes in a row where you're like, hey, that's Wu Fei.
Okay. Yeah.
He's doing a thing. You get more of him in later episodes.
He gets some good stuff later, so I'm not too worried about
it. Yeah, I just didn't recognize him. Outside of the cockpit.
That's funny.
And he's the one you see the least of in episode one.
So. Oh, yeah.
So Wu Fei's got a truckload of explosives now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but I assume he has a plan for them. We don't get to dwell on it because it's time to get back to that party.
The birthday party.
The birthday party is wrapping up. Relina seems is sitting in front of a cake that she seems very confused by. She's kind of spaced out while everybody's waiting for her to blow out the candles. Mm-hmm. It's like she's forgotten or doesn't know how cake works. I assume it's supposed to be because she's so distracted thinking about Hero. But
right.
Again, like so many Relina scenes, it just plays out weird.
Yeah.
She kind of like snaps to it.
It's like her brain is a loading bar.
Yeah.
Like, just a wait. Keep waiting.
It's a little spinny color 56%. Wheel.
She's gone through some trauma.
57.
What you trauma? You keep referencing the trauma.
The trauma, man.
And that may be true, but I mean, don't know about the trauma.
Some dude did
yet.
Threaten to kill her.
She was into it.
She really was. She's about to show the lengths to which, the extent to which she was into it.
Anyway.
Prep Smurm.
Galumphing in. Yeah.
He's just got bugs in his teeth and stuff from like speeding down the highway. Yeah, he galumps in. Oh, God, I didn't miss it yet. Immediately narcs on Hero.
Yeah, immediately.
Immediately, like coming through the door. Hey, weird, this guy almost ran me off the road in his ambulance. Relina hears ambulance and knows, oh, it must have been Hero because he is renowned for having an ambulance.
Well, she saw him steal
it. It's the one thing she knows about him, really, is that he has an ambulance. And actually, I misspoke earlier. This is when she storms out of the party.
She runs the fuck out.
With only the gruffest of apologies, if that, before she runs out on everybody. And was that her mom or just
that's
a random?
Mom.
That was, I've never seen such a severe expression as she leaves.
Okay.
Hero, what are you planning to do? Who are you going to kill?
That's not the mom. That's what Relina.
That's not the
mom. And also, Relina's mom has a normal voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such a severe expression. Like,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Like, she's the only one that has the weirdest voice.
Yeah.
Also love, is it Smurm that says, let me give you a ride? She's like, no!
No!
And everyone's like,
what? How's he going to give her a ride on his motorcycle?
You know what? Smurm's just looking for an angle here. He's just trying to make time with this girl. Oh, and yeah. He's trying everything he knows how to do.
That boy you like, he stole an ambulance.
Yeah. Get on my cool bike.
Who are you?
Party's over. We cut back underwater to the search site for Hero's Gundam. Zex and his nerds find it. It's sprawled out face down on the floor.
I love the phrase Zex and his nerds.
Well, he's just got like...
He's got some boys that
like,
are with
Zex,
him.
Zex is clearly like a badass.
Yeah.
On multiple levels.
Yeah.
But his henchmen guys are just some, oh, hey, boss, gosh, you think that's a good idea?
They are technically the elite.
Yeah, well,
which tells you something about the irregular alliance military.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Them,
they have not acquitted themselves especially well in this episode. So it's inactive, but one of the nerds points out that it's unscathed, even after the combat and the fall through the atmosphere and crashes.
There's not a single scratch on it.
Yeah.
An impressive beast.
That my favorite sex line so far.
That's a great line. I love that line.
I have to say, our enemies have come up with an impressive beast. But now that we have it, we can become fierce beast ourselves.
I feel like Zex is always looking around for someone to appreciate.
Like, all his soldiers just like look down at their keyboards and pretend he didn't say anything because it's making things uncomfortable. But that's a great line.
We can become fierce beast ourselves.
I will say the look of the character suits the line readings. Mm-hmm. Everything about Zex fits together.
Oh yeah,
sure.
It just nothing as funny as sort of over the top as some of it is. It doesn't feel disjointed. His characterization.
No. You're like, this is a real character. Anyway. This is a real person.
Yep.
Yeah. And they do more to fill that out.
Yeah. The more you learn about Zex, you're like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so, it all fits. It all
it
fits.
It all fits.
It all fits.
They try to touch. They try to pick up the Gundam, and like. Sort of like a flashbang death charge.
Yeah, like a flash. Yeah.
Falls in, through the water, explodes, sort of blinds their sensors, blinds their, you know, their view through the cockpit of their suits that they're in. And then Duo appears. He jumped back off the ship and came back down here to mess with these guys. Everybody panics, as you would, because at this point they know he's super dangerous, except the dude driving the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Man, this is his moment.
He's going for
it. This is his moment to shine. And I gotta say, for like an unnamed henchman, he does pretty damn good.
You gotta kill him. He's got to be the one that dies because he's voiced by the voice actor that plays Catra.
Yeah, it's the same guy. Same guy. So we can't give him too many more lines. Yeah. But it's a really cool fight because he clamps like the pincher of the crab onto Duo's Gundam's face.
Yeah.
And then just point blanks like three rounds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you see Duo's grip go slack on his thermal scythe, you know, and he starts to fall backwards. And I don't know if the idea was just that it did so much damage that it forced a reboot of the systems, or maybe the concussive force knocked Duo out for a minute.
I think it just caught him off guard.
Well, he kind of goes slack.
Yeah, like, he does
like,
a little bit.
Because I remember for a second, I was like, oh, shit, like he's about to get captured.
Well, I think they do it that way to show, because they've already shown the Gundam supremacy.
Yeah.
At this point, I think they're doing it this way to show that Oz also has some decent mobility.
Yeah, they even say it that the new armor of Oz is pretty tough.
Yeah, he has that line right. Yeah.
Yeah, they want to be clear that the Gundams are the supreme war machine, but they're not invincible.
It's not like hammer versus ant kind of thing. Right. Yeah. It's, of course, this poor guy had to go complete, like, balls out suicide charge to
momentarily stun him
for three seconds. Yeah. But anyway, he does pretty good. Unfortunately for him, he pulls the old, what's his name that dies fighting the mountain in Game of Thrones? I can't remember his name.
Oberon.
Thank you. Yeah. He pulls the Oberon thing. He celebrates too soon because he gets on the comms. He's like, Lieutenant Zex, I did it. I defeated him. Oh, no. Like, you wasted your 3 seconds of time that you could have capitalized.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now the duo's awake and he splits open the cancer and the kid's joy turns to horror as the crushing weight of the sea obliterates him.
Mm-hmm.
But really, I just thought that was a cool combat sequence.
They've been very judicious with the combat. Yeah. It's very like contained, fast.
That was like
very violent and very cool.
Yeah, that was an 8-second encounter. They showed me something cool in an 8-second.
And it told you something about the characters very and the situation.
So. It wasn't superfluous. There wasn't like way too much jumping and running around and kicking. I learned something about the capabilities of both sides, and it was just entertaining. It was just a cool moment. RIP to that little nerd that was driving the cancer. He did his damnedest. He should be remembered for that. The rest of them scatter. Duo notices that the self-destruct mechanism, he recognizes that little blinking light on Hero's Gundam is its self-destruct mechanism, and he disables it with the other end of his little thermal scythe that he has and says, and decides to recover the frames. I'll use it as my backup supply. I felt like he should have been a little more what the fuck about the presence of another Gundam on Earth.
That's identical to his.
Yeah.
Like he even says.
Yeah.
This is identical to mine.
He's not like, wait a second, I'm not the only one. What the hell's going on? He's like,
found a Gundam.
Cool. Spare Gundam. I'll scrap it for parts.
Yeah.
Which, whatever, if that's how they wrote it. But honestly, the first time I watched it, that was a little confusing to me because I had decided, okay, they don't know about each other. And then when he was so blasé about finding this, I thought, well, maybe like he knows, but Hero doesn't know. But I think it's just a kind of a bad piece of writing on that one line.
Yeah, I think what they're trying to, like, I agree, it's confusing. Cause like, wait, do they know about each other? They don't. Do some know? Do others don't? I think what they're trying to convey is that all the Gundam pilots are... they're not command level intellects. No. Like they're not thinking strategy.
Yeah.
Their job is to go down and fucking wreck shit.
Yep.
And so everything they view is through that lens of how can I wreck the most shit?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, I found another Gundam. Great, I can wreck more shit with it. Like he's not thinking where did it come from?
Which is exactly why you people recruit child soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if you meet the most basic needs of a child, beyond that, they're not bothered thinking big picture. They think all they care about is what's happening like 15 feet in any direction from where they're
standing. Oh, you told me to burn the village, so I burned the village.
Okay, I burned the village, and then I would get food tonight. Yeah,
I can buy that he wouldn't think. He scanned it, he's like, huh, the design's just like mine. Cool, I have a backup. Next.
Yeah, that's as far as he thought.
That's as far as he thought.
Which, it's probably me putting too much pressure on the character because I'm trying to piece together the big picture as I'm watching this. I'm like, no, give me more. Don't give me. But the fact is that actually makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you're telling me that these kids are just living weapons, which is obviously what they're sort of revealing to us throughout the course of the first two episodes, and he's just like, great, more resources for me to continue my mission of fucking shit up. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Okay. We cut back to, I guess this is supposed to be the military marina.
Yeah.
Yes.
Things are blowing up.
Yep.
officers, soldiers are running around panicking. Mm-hmm. We see the empty ambulance, so we know that someone's like, hey, medics, get your butts over here, and you cut back, and it's the empty ambulance, and you know that Hero has successfully smuggled himself onto this military installation. Then we cut to a very distant shot of Relina's pink limo parked on the edge of the cliff. I want to know how she explained to her driver why she wanted
to. He's got to be used to it at this point.
Yeah. She's a good like 3 to 4 miles away from the base watching it blow up.
Yes.
But then.
And then in the next scene.
She's there.
Hey!
That is kind of my one. That was my one.
Like, how did she get on base?
My one real beef. How did she get on base? How did she locate Hero on that entire giant ass base?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Hero had to go to great lengths to smuggle himself onto this base.
He's also actively concealing his presence.
Yeah.
On the base.
And she's like in a party dress. And she just shows up. Hero, it is you.
Well, I guess once the explosion started. Everyone's freaking out.
But that's typically when military bases going
on high alert. Yeah.
Nobody gets in. Like if there was a time to not try to just waltz through the front gate when the base is under attack would, you know, be that.
Yeah,
time.
They should have had like as Hero's coming in, he like takes out the booth or whatever.
Yeah. Or giving me another scene in there to indicate the lapse of time as well, because the fact that it cuts from that, I mean, maybe 30 minutes passed, but because it cuts from her on the cliff to her sneaking up behind Hero, it makes it seem like she teleported herself down, which, shit, for all I know, maybe she did.
Maybe
I mean,
she,
like
I said,
if she's a robot, maybe she can teleport.
Yeah, I think they're doing, like I said, they jam-pack these first two episodes. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think they were just like, it's not that important how she got on, is what they're saying to themselves.
Yeah.
But it's immediately like, wait, how did she, what?
Yeah.
Like, it throws you off.
If it's something, and there's a lot of things, like when I said, I don't need to see Duo go fetch his rocket fist out of the drink and like screw it back on.
Yeah, that stuff's fine.
I don't need to see that. Something like this, if you want to, you can't play that they don't need to see that card if it's going to be jarring.
Right.
And this is jarring.
And if there had been something else in between her pulling up as the limousine and then her finding Hero, we would have done the like, oh, okay, something happened in between. Time has passed.
She's the daughter of the vice chancellor.
She had a friend. She said, come on in, baby. It's not safe out there.
If they just cut away and shown me another shot of a Gundam on a truck and then come back to this, I would assume that some time had passed.
Right.
But anyway. Whatever. It's a quibble. I mean, it's still that this is coming into sort of like the home stretch of the episode where things start happening fast and furious. It's all very cool. So yeah, she comes up behind him. Hero, it is you. It is you. Those are torpedoes.
Aren't they? I can tell.
I can tell. I'm very good at identifying munitions.
I can tell.
That's my most. I hate that.
It's bad.
I hate that part. Very, very bad. I will admit that those are torpedoes, aren't they?
I can tell.
Well, where does she get off demanding so much from Hero?
Yeah.
Like, they haven't even had a conversation.
They have a relationship.
She acts like they're old friends. Hero, it's me. You have to tell me what's happening. I mean, that's not exactly. I'm paraphrasing.
Which goes to my assumption that Relina is just crazy. She is insane, which is why she talks the way she does, why she does the things she do.
Yeah, I think with her and Hero, it's sort of like they're fated to be together because he's the quote unquote main character, she's the main girl.
Yeah.
As that trope. And so they're going to get together. Yeah. We expect it. There's sort of a gravity that pulls them together. And they're also probably playing around with that whole, like, the moment they meet, they're connected. There's no way they can get away from it. That's why he doesn't immediately kill her.
Yeah.
He just threatens to and waits until now when he has no other choice, he'll kill her. With anyone else, he would have just killed out of hand because that's how he's been conveyed. But it's just not... They don't show their work. It doesn't make any sense. You just
assume
you're left to kind of fill in on the margins. Oh, I guess this is kind of what's happening.
Well, they're bound by destiny.
That's pretty standard. It may not be other animes.
Other
animes may not have been this lazy about it, but that is kind of standard. Why do they like each other? Yeah. I don't know. I guess they're supposed to.
That's a mechanism that I can really appreciate when it's done reasonably well. Yeah. I mean, one of the things I always liked about the Witcher books and the TV show based off the books is, like, I always appreciated the author's audacity to just say, Geralt and Ciri are bound because of destiny. Because somebody said a thing one time, made a promise to someone, and now they're bound and forever. And don't even worry, like, what do you got to say? Do something about it. You know, it's like, I don't want to spend three books establishing the relationship between these two characters. I need them to be connected for the rest of the story to run forward from here. So, yeah, just a magic thing. You know, their destinies are intertwined.
Sure.
Anyway, no, I appreciate when you're that bold about it. Yeah. I really can appreciate
that. Oh, yeah. Well, I also think it was a decision that it's the second episode. We still have to lock in our audience. We have to keep we have to make this something that little boys want to watch.
Right. Yeah.
So
you're not going to get into
the important part are the Gundams and the stuff
ship blowing
up
and people
all
dying.
That stuff. Yeah, so we're not going to give time to this right now. They do eventually.
Sure.
But for right now, they're like, no, we can't. Just skip it.
Yeah, stop trying to color my perceptions of the future by saying eventually all this will be perfect.
Yeah, don't Stephen Moffat him. Eventually it'll get cool, so stick with it.
Stick with it.
And then it never gets cool.
Definitely ever. Building to something.
You won't be disappointed by the end of this story. I can assure you.
You see.
So we know that they're bound by destiny because they look at each other and overpronounce each other's names. He looks at her and goes, Relina.
Hero.
Adds like a third syllable to hero. And then, as I'm starting to feel like the scene is kind of spiraling, it's starting to, like, topple over the line into silly, Hero saves it with, ka-click, urine over your head.
Yeah.
Say goodbye.
Yep. Yeah. Thing is, I think he has that moment where he's like, oh, I kind of know her. And, like, of course, he's like, we're fated to be together or something. But then he's like, nope, child soldier.
Nope.
Urine over your fucking head.
He whips she's a threat a to the gun, mission. She's got to die.
He whips out a gun.
And there is no question in my mind, and you can argue this, he's about to shoot her.
Oh, I think so.
He's about to put a bullet
I think they show his finger tightens on the trigger.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right when Duo pops in.
So fortunately, he pulls a gun, and then fortunately for her, Duo sort of like pops up out of the water or whatever. And I guess I hadn't noticed how rocking his braided ponytail.
Oh, yes.
Because I guess I've only seen him in the cockpit. Uh-huh, uh-huh. You know, so now that sucker is like unfurled and free to fly. Mm-hmm. He wears sort of like a black jumpsuit with a priest collar, almost.
That's it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, good. Maybe that'll be explained later, maybe not. It's pretty obvious you're the bad guy here. After he shoots him, a cool slow motion shot of like, he gets the round off. You see like Hero's probably genetically improved reflexes trying to kick in.
Right.
Just doesn't get out of there. He's able to turn to the side, but the round still catches him in the arm and he goes flying. And you hear Duo says, it's pretty obvious you're the bad guy here. You are right, lady. And then Relina prevents him from...
What are you doing?
Why do you want to shoot him for? Mm-hmm.
Yes, she said it just like that.
Pretty close.
And it like Italian pizzeria man.
What do you want to shoot him for?
What do you want to shoot him for? Come on, that's a spicy meatball. She does. You go back and play it. She doesn't do the Italian accent.
Okay, I will.
But she does. It's the most emotion we've heard from her.
It really is. Why
she jumps out in front, in between, where the path of the bullet would be, gets in front of him and goes, what do you want to shoot him for? He is justifiably confused, Duo is, because he's like, I thought I was the hero saving you here. He just was going to shoot you.
Also, I love the thought that after murdering conservatively several hundred people in the day he's been here.
And enjoying it.
Having a great time. Yeah. He's cruising along and he sees a nice lady with a gun pulled on her, jumps out of his Gundam, swims over. You know,
no, like, he had already been out of the Gundam.
No. Yeah, okay, that was another
one. It's confusing.
Then let's just talk about this here then. So this is another thing that I think is right on that line of maybe they should have shown me how he got from his Gundam to the surface while his Gundam is still like in autopilot mode retrieving Hero's Gundam from the ocean floor. Did he like ride it up to the surface, hop out, put it
because he's not wet. That's true.
He's not wet. Yeah, he's not dripping. Although the way the shot works, he's on this pier. It looks like he just popped up out of the water, but he's not. You know, his like I said, his ponytail is flowing in the breeze.
I don't know. Escape pod?
I don't think they have escape pods.
You die with your Gundam.
You don't know.
I mean, I don't remember them using an escape pod at any other point of the show.
The Federation has those little parachutes. That's the guy that give them a tactical edge.
Yeah,
I think it's another one of the shows, like, don't think about this too hard.
Yeah, because
But that's a logistics thing. It is. He was on the bottom of the ocean.
But I don't know that I necessarily care about that. I think I'm more willing to forgive that than how the hell did Relina get on the base at this point.
Yeah.
Oh, agree.
That's fair.
Agree. It's not as egregious.
There is a different set of things I'm going to have to tolerate from this show, understanding that it was aimed at primarily at like probably 10 to 13 year old boys, mm-hmm. and it's animated. Things that we would have murdered a Voyager episode
if
this is Voyager and there was, and they all, of course, they have a whole hour to tell a story, not 22 minutes. We would have crushed a Voyager episode for a logistics lapse like that.
Yeah.
But here it's like, I don't know. I mean, it's all fantasy space tech. I can think of a way, like you said, maybe he wrote it up to the top, hopped out, hid somewhere, put it in, programmed it to go. I don't know what the Gundams are capable of doing without a pilot, but clearly they can do some stuff.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
They can execute basic commands.
So. They can pose.
Yeah. They can definitely pose.
Breakdance.
Yeah. So he, let's see, I lost some place in my notes because we got on a digression there.
Well, Death Scythe and Heroes Gundam finally get to the surface.
Oh, there's a few, like, they have a few still shots, non-animated shots of her ripping her dress, bandaging his arm, and him kind of looking at her like, maybe I don't have to shoot you today. Mm-hmm. why are you doing this? And it is weird because it's three still frames right in a row, and then they go back to, which artistically is, I'm giving the benefit of the doubt that they're doing something cool there, and it wasn't just because like they ran out of time and to animate those cells.
I like to think the animator is like, I will not draw this.
I'll draw it.
I will draw one still picture for each thing. But that's it.
So Duo notices that off in the distance the water is roiling. He's like, oh, there come our Gundams. They've already reached the surface. I must have miscalculated the time. They kind of start to breach the surface there. He pops like a flare.
Yes.
And holds it up. And I don't know if the flare is a signal to his Gundam.
No, or it's so, blind Relina. It's so Relina doesn't see
to
it.
To blind Relina. Okay, yeah, that was what it was.
Don't look, lady.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't want to kill you, so don't look at
it. Sure, you got your reasons for being here, but just turn around and go and save yourself a lot of grief. The line is some version of that. Basically tells her to kick rocks. While he's doing that, Hero makes his move. Duo shoots at him a few times, misses.
Does a giant flip.
Yeah, does a super awesome flip, despite the fact that he still is nursing a bullet wound. But it's in his arms. Okay.
He gets shot in the leg, too.
Oh, did he catch one in the leg?
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that. Yeah, so that makes it even more improbable.
When he tries to go for the gun, after he drops it, he gets shot in the leg.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. He dies for the gun first.
Yeah.
And Duo shoots him and shoots the gun to knock the gun further out of the way. Yeah. But misses him as he's like making his move on the top of the torpedo pod.
But I love that flip, and then he just like fist just pounds on the
detonator. They all just fly like,
yeah, it's like boom
with like the pallet and everything that they're hanging on, and he's on the top. He rides the stack of torpedoes out over the water.
He sort of flips off.
Duo like, goes, "What are you doing, you fool?" Hero kind of flips or falls or flip falls off of him. And then we have the shot of him as he's plummeting towards the water, his face very serene. He goes, finally, it is finished. Mission complete. Then he shuts his eyes, like I guess he passes out halfway to the water, mid-fall. He sort of blacks out. The torpedoes hit the two Gundams.
Yeah.
Not that they have facial expressions, but you can also see almost... Duo's Gundam almost has a "what the fuck" on his face. Like, come on. Right as they come up out of the water, they're not blown up, but they're knocked backwards. It looks like their systems are kind of in shutdown. And the last time we see them, they're both drifting back down towards the ocean floor. Duo is like, realizes he must be a Gundam pilot because he knows the impact tolerance
of
a Gundam. And then, let's see. Relina, I should have written down what her actual line is here.
still has no idea what's happening.
This is where she finally is like, wait a sec. Oh, it's she just looks at them and goes, who are these people?
Excellent. Now finally, you're finally.
Ramina, you're getting that something is up.
You're who finally asking.
This isn't just an interesting new boy who crawled up out of the ocean in a fighter pilot suit and joined your school and is really good at riding horses and fencing. So she seems to be sort of stirring from the waking dream she's been wandering around in for two episodes.
Maybe that's it. Maybe she's been sleepwalking the whole time.
We cut back to Lieutenant Zex's craft, and he gets the report that they've lost contact with the Cancer and the Pisces and all the other suits that were down there. He says, I see. There's a jinx that once you see a Gundam, you will not come out alive. I hope this jinx doesn't come true. Cut to a shot of Hero face down, unconscious, in the drink. Doesn't appear that anybody's helping him.
I was like, I'm pretty sure he needs to breathe.
Yeah, when someone's face down like that, like you gotta, you have to prioritize at least getting them turned over the right way.
Sure.
And then we cut to the safari. It's love. Da 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 da. And a tug on a rhino's tail. I talk to a dog and I stare at some birds.
That's how I remember it.
And that's it.
Yep.
For that episode.
Yeah.
Final thoughts from you two?
Derek?
I think it's interesting because it's easier to follow than the first episode, but has more egregious, like, wait, what? Like, I understand what you're saying has happened, but I don't understand how it happened. Like, how did Duo get out? How did she get on the base?
Sure.
All that kind of thing. I will say I do think they do a good job of, they're slowly building in the mythos of the Gundams themselves and the world, doing some good world building, and also teaching us about 40% of the Gundam pilots. Like, we have a better understanding, especially Hero and Duo.
Yeah.
We have a better understanding of who they are and what they think is important and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, for me though, it would fall back down into bad just because Relina's voice acting is the worst it will probably ever be in this episode, to the point where it confuses what you're trying to learn about her and about the world. Cause it's like, why would any human react this way and say these words in this way? But like I said, I like Death Scythe a lot as one. So this one kind of highlights how badass Death Scythe is. So it's hard for me to totally hate the episode.
Yeah.
But in general, I think it's the same problem as the first episode. They're squeezing too much into 22 minutes. Just too much, and things fall off the side, and then all the weirdness of the localization and the dub further obfuscates and confuses what they're trying to convey.
Okay. I agree with some of that, I suppose. But I think, as an episode entitled The Gundam Death Scythe, I think it does a good. It does what it sets out to do, to introduce Duo and show us
it
more about
it. It has a Death Scythe.
And it
does
has
have a Death Scythe.
No, it shows you more of him. It shows you more of the Gundam itself. I think there are some good character moments for him, and you get more of Zex, and you get a little bit of Catra and Troa. And I do think it's less crammed or jam-packed than the previous episode. I enjoyed it more. And I don't necessarily have a problem with them cutting some stuff. It's like, I don't really care how he got the Gundams up. That doesn't really bother me. Or how he got himself up, you know. He figured it out.
From the bottom of the ocean, though.
But we don't really know. But we don't know. We don't know how deep it is here. We have no real information on depth or anything like that. I don't know. I just don't know how. For what they're trying to do in 22 minutes, I'm okay with them cutting that one. I do think that they probably could have left like Wu Fei's little part out and maybe shown a little bit of something of how Relina got in. Or put the Wu Fei part between Relina getting out of the car and her randomly showing up at the base. I will say that the Relina parts and voice acting included aren't great. I don't think it that it's terrible enough to... I think there's enough good in the episode to keep it on the rad side of things, though.
Yeah, I mean, you both make valid points. I think they, despite some of the inconsistencies and the weirdness that Derek pointed out, which is definitely there, it improves on the key things that I disliked about episode one.
Sure.
They do finally linger on one scene for more than 12 seconds.
Yeah.
Characters have several lines in a row. It breathes more. I felt like I was gasping for air trying to take notes on episode one, and so it sort of destroyed any goodwill that I might have had towards it because I was just not enjoying, literally enjoying the process of trying to prepare for this podcast while I watched it. I was angry at episode one. That was not the case this time.
Yeah.
It was much easier to... Despite, Wufei's scene out of nowhere was confusing, and there's a couple of other jarring cuts, and at least one, if not two, Relina line reads that are so bad that they're sort of distracting and pull you out of the moment. But on the whole, I think it improved on the key things that I beat up on episode one for, in terms of spacing things out just a little bit, letting me know something about a character besides just that character's name.
Yeah.
Probably the most important thing I can say about it is that when I finished this episode, I wanted to go ahead and start episode three.
Mm-hmm,
like,
sure.
I'm excited to watch episode three now. And I wasn't really, my feeling at the end of episode one was like, what the fuck is this? You know, if I hadn't had to watch episode two if I hadn't agreed to it for the podcast.
I'm glad we decided to watch two episodes.
Then I probably wouldn't have jumped right into episode two. But when this one ended, I wanted to be like, yes, Hulu, please play the next episode. I want to see what the hell happens next.
Yeah.
So episode two has accomplished what episode one should have done, which is hook me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I'm hooked on this now. I think I know enough about most of these characters to, if not give a damn about them, I'm at least interested in what they're doing and what's going to happen next. So, yeah, I mean, despite some pretty obvious flaws that we've talked about, I would put this one on. I'd say it's rad. I'm excited about moving forward through the rest of the season.
Hold on to that feeling for 2 to 3 years.
Yeah. Outstanding.
Mysterious child.
I'm going to start saying that to my kids just to freak them out. Mysterious child. Hey, Dad, can I have some Lucky Charms?
Mysterious child.
That was weird. Gentlemen, your closing arguments.
I feel I have little to add to the testimony we have already heard. The report of Duo Maxwell's bullet fire echoing over the metal skin of that submarine was the sound of any decent viewer of anime's heart breaking. Any hope that this show could shed any true light on the nature of war and the endless cycle of human violence is forever shattered. All we have left is a limp genuflection in that direction by a crude telenovela from Japan that happens to include giant fighting robots. Beautiful. Do they know how beautiful Earth is? The prosecution rests.
Colonel Defense Man?
The prosecution should indeed rest, for space is cold and wars are heartless. And as we all know, there are no pillows in space. I'm not sure why pillow technology is so far behind. We can build Gundams and robots with lasers, but a comfortable pillow in space is just beyond us for some reason. Much like the quality of this episode. It is so rad. It is beyond rad. It has become Brad. Thank you.
I guess it is still my august responsibility to make judgment based on whatever all this stuff is. So after reviewing the proceedings, I hereby decree that Case 102, Gundam Death Scythe, is rad. These verdicts cannot be appealed, or maybe they can be. I don't know. Court adjourned. Can I go home now?
The People versus Gundam Wing is recorded in front of no soldiers, not a single one. Josh Darnell is played by Josh Darnell. The prosecution, Biliardo Peacecraft, is played by Derek Adams. The defense, John Cush Renata the 13th. Colonel Esquire is played by Jonathan Sparks. All episodes of Gundam Wing are presumed rad until proven bad.
A Shadow Public Radio presentation. For more excruciating action, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you seek podcast content.